Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle and welcome to interviews 4, 5, 6, and 7 of our tour through the Sweet 16. Unbelievable interview day today, and my guests included Chris Beard of Texas Tech, Mark Few of Gonzaga, Bill Self of Kansas, and Mike Krzyzewski from Duke. Jordan Clarkson made the show open, and it was not because he dropped 17 last night that win over Milwaukee. Martin Perez served up some revenge, medium rare. Iggy Azalea went on Bravo and dropped some literal straight fire on Nick Young. Podcast Tuesday gets rolling as well. In fact, let's do this whole thing right now. Maybe you saw that story about LeBron James. ESPN had this story whereby, and we know LeBron is a physical freak of nature, there's a story that LeBron gained 7 pounds in a playoff game. Didn't lose 7 pounds, gained 7 pounds in a playoff game. Now that allegedly, him getting 7 pounds, is not the only jaw-dropping story involving a current Cleveland Cavalier. And if I'm going to start with something other than LeBron gaining 7 pounds, you know it's pretty amazing. You know what I'm about to tell you is maybe even more insane than the King piling on the pounds. Let me start by saying that the Road Trippin' podcast, which was started by Channing Frye and Richard Jefferson, might be the single greatest podcast in the world. Not named the Jim Rome podcast, of course. Why is that? Because not only do you get great behind-the-scenes stories and anecdotes from current players, but you also get these amazing takes on science and history as well. As an example, it was on that podcast that Kyrie Irving first launched his Flat Earth Truther bombs. And now we've got a new addition to the catalog. I present to you, former Laker, current Cavalier, and thinker of enormous thoughts, Jordan Clarkson. And my man's got not just one, but he's got not just two. He has three amazing angles on the latest edition. Now, let me rank them in order. Going from back to top, his third most controversial stance is, quote, "I don't believe when they went to the moon," end quote. You know, not that earth-shattering. Certainly not the first guy to say it. Still a little bit out there, but not the first guy to say it. Teammate Larry Nance Jr. asked him, "You think it was a conspiracy?" To which Clarkson was more than prepared to respond, quote, "I think they was in a studio in Hollywood and recorded that. Straight up, I'm just being dead honest," end quote. So then he goes on to explain the theory that centers around the fact that the American flag was waving on the moon without wind. You've probably heard that before too. That's not original, but he's selling that pretty hard. Quote, "They gonna make the wind? They just needed something to believe in back then," end quote. Once again, they gonna make the wind? Nah, they just needed something back then to believe in. Once again, not the first guy to advance that theory. In fact, it's almost cliche to think that you believe the moon landing was faked on a studio in Hollywood. But here is my answer to that. Here is always my answer to that. If you really believe that, why don't you roll up on Buzz Aldrin, get in his face, sell it to him, and then see how that goes for you?
You're a coward and a liar and a thief.
And you have a broken face.
And a thief.
You see, but while Clarkson doesn't believe in the moon landing up in the sky, he does allow that there may have been some pretty interesting creatures down below the waves. Creatures like, wait for this now, and this is different. Creatures like mermaids. My man believes in mermaids. Quote, "There's so much stuff in the sea that we ain't never seen before," end quote. Wait, there's even more. Once again, quote, "Bruh, we don't even know if dinosaurs is real. They're probably down there just chilling. I'm saying if some of them could be down just all the way in the bottom, just chilling and asleep or something and waiting for the time to come out," end quote. He's talking about mermaids down there chilling, so far down there that we can't see them, and they're just waiting for a good reason to come out. So let me recap. He thinks the moon landing was faked, but he believes that there are mermaids that are at the bottom of the ocean just chilling and asleep or something and waiting for the time to come out. Yeah, I love that. I completely buy the notion that there are mermaids who have been napping it out on the bottom of the ocean for centuries. You know, kind of like us, just smashing the snooze button and not bothering to come up to the surface. They haven't had a reason to. Makes complete sense to me. My man, normally I would say you need to spend more time on Apollo 13 and less on Shape of Water and Splash. But I respect it. It is different. However, that's not all. All of these takes pale in comparison to the biggest truth bomb that he dropped on that podcast. Quote, this is going to get a little crazy, all right? I'm going to take y'all a little left on this one. Let's stop right there. I love that. You know it's going to get a little weird when somebody precedes the take by saying, this is going to get a little crazy, all right? I'm going to take y'all a little left on this one. But as much as I thought that I was prepared for it to get crazy, I was not prepared for what was yet to come. Namely, and I quote, y'all know how we got dogs and stuff, right? So, I think it was bigger people in the world before us, and the dinosaurs was they pets. Dudes walking dinosaurs. Shout out to DJ Montage. He's the co-host. Because most people, when they hear somebody suggest that dinosaurs were actually domesticated house pets for giant human beings, most guys I know in that position just take off the headphones, carefully unplug all the podcast equipment, and throw it out the window. Not this dude. He had a very simple follow-up question. Quote, how big were these people? But Clarkson was ready for that too. Oh, you look at a dinosaur, they got to be 3 times bigger than them, end quote. Yeah, I got to say one thing for this guy. The math does check out. The math works. The ratios work. I guess that would mean that in Clarkson's world, there were people who were roughly 50 feet tall. And they would take their brontosaurus out for a walk, or they'd pet their T-Rex while sleeping on a 60-foot couch. Or like we do with cats and dogs, let the T-Rex sleep in the bed with them. Makes sense? Yeah, I mean, sure, we haven't seen any evidence of these colossal people who would make Will Chamberlain and Sean Bradley seem like Lego people. Hey, but whatever. Man, don't get bogged down. Don't get bogged down in the details when you've got an amazing theory such as dinosaurs being pets for giants. And no, I'm not going to suggest that the league immediately administer a drug test to Clarkson, even though that does sound like the kind of thing that you would think of in a certain state. I mean, I wonder like how deep that thing goes. Were there dinosaur pet stores? Were there dinosaur breeders back in the day? Were there rescue dinosaurs back then? Look, I don't know this cat well enough to know if he believes any of this or all of this. I do know that Laker Josh Hart, his former teammate, was not impressed. Hart tweeted, quote, at Jordan Clarkson, so this is what you say when you don't have me sitting next to you anymore. Hey, I need more. I want more. I want to know more. I want him to spin off into his own podcast. My man's not a guest. He needs his own podcast, you know, where he can riff on anything, science, history, anything that comes to his mind. Because whether this guy is trolling us hard or genuinely believes it, you got to admit, claiming that dinosaurs were pets for 50-foot human beings is one of the all-time great angles. Weird is good, so that is great. Oh, and by the way, he is averaging 18 points per game over his last four. But those takes are even better than anything he's doing on the floor. Man, keep up the good work, Jay. Stay strong, Jay. Keep doing you, Jay. Stay on it. Stay on it. What if they had dinosaur purses that they rocked on the way into the giant mall? How about a dinosaur stroller? Or how about one of those dinosaur Bjorns that they can wear in the front of them? Clones, give me a minute so I can talk to you about MyBookie right before the Sweet 16. If you already busted your bracket, there is still a way for you to cash in on March Madness at MyBookie. If you have not signed up yet, it is not too late. Lay down some money and score big on college hoops. Join thousands of online players and start betting at MyBookie.ag. Here's why you want to do this. For instance, are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Come join MyBookie today. This is a service that has been good to countless thousands. This is why you want to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. Fast and without any hassles. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else. They even have in-game live betting so you can place a bet after tip-off. Join now and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. Use my promo code JUNGLE to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. Play, win, and get paid. MyBookie.ag. Check that out. That's my bookie, and now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Chris Beard is my guest. Chris, it is awesome to have you back. How are you?
Doing great. Excited to be on.
Man, it's great to have you on. So after you beat Florida, in the on-court interview, you kept saying Texas Tech is going to the Sweet 16. Texas Tech is going to the Sweet 16. I know you've already shifted from celebrating to focusing on Purdue, but man, what does it mean for Texas Tech to be going back to the Sweet 16?
Well, it's a special time of year. Second year building our program here, to have this kind of success early just kind of validates the things we've been doing work. And I'm just so proud for everybody in the family. I'm happy for our fans, really proud of our players. So we're just excited to still be playing.
And not only to win games, but to win games the way you have in the first couple of games against a couple of tough, tough schools in Stephen F. Austin and Florida. Let me ask you about a couple of your guys. Keenan Evans, senior, 23-6-5 against Stephen F. Austin, then 22-3 against Florida. He said that every game is a senior night to him, and he just wants to keep it going. I thought you had one of your great analogies. You said that coaching him is like having a good plate of enchiladas. You're looking at it, you only have two bites, but it's so good, you want to turn it into three. So what's it been like coaching him since he arrived, and then how proud are you of the way he's playing on the big stage?
Keenan's special, Jim. He's one of the best players in college basketball. Not many people knew about him until this year, but now I'm so proud his name's getting out there. Like, when you talk to Coach Self later today, you could ask him about Keenan. I think he would have been the Big 12 Player of the Year if we would have won the conference. And that's nothing against Devontae Graham, who did win it. But I think Keenan's an NBA player. What makes him really cool, like, in the day of, like, you know, the one-and-dones and McDonald's All-Americans and stuff, Keenan's kind of old school, a lot like myself. He's a guy that, you know, just came into college. He wasn't a heralded recruit and just started working. His first 2 years with Tubby Smith and then his last two with us, he's just kind of a self-made player. And I'm just so fortunate to coach him. You know, it's like on that enchilada deal, I was thinking about this last night. It's like, you know, you ever been at, like, the bar or something, you put, like, three songs left in the jukebox, then they put the lights on, you got one song left, and you're just like, man, can we just hear one more song? And I was telling Keenan that yesterday. I just want one more song with him and this team. And I'm the luckiest guy in the world to coach these guys.
Chris Beard joining us. I mean, it feels like that, right? I mean, at this point of the season, every win means that you get to advance, but it also means you get to spend more time with these guys and extend the run. I mean, Chris, it's clear how much you love these guys and how much they love you. How great is it then to get at least another week with them?
It's everything. You know, it's not just the games. That's obviously like the cream on the cake. It's like the practices yesterday, you know, just another chance to get on the guys and challenge them and compete. And it's all the special things, the bus rides, the pregame meals, the film sessions, just those things are priceless. And, you know, when former players come back to town, and we've had a lot of them lately, the thing they always say is, man, I just wish I had one more day. I wish I had one more practice. I wish I had one more, you know, chance to be a part of this college deal. And that's really where we are. You know, our players, too, are really embracing the moment. And I think that gives us a real chance here down the stretch because we've got guys playing together.
We're talking to Texas Tech head coach Chris Beard. You know, one more guy I want to ask you about. I mean, Evans is playing huge as a senior. And again, I mean, I can't say enough about this guy. I love the way that he's a general on the floor. But if you need him to score the ball, he can do that for you as well. But then you got Zaire Smith, who he's out there, and it included that amazing alley-oop with 30 seconds left. He had a game where he had 18, 9, and 7. Guy's got tremendous ability, but what's it say about him that he's coming up that big in huge games as a freshman?
Yeah, just like Keenan, kind of been under the radar, our two freshmen, you know, Zaire Smith, and I put Jarrett Culver in that same category. You know, against Florida, Culver almost has a triple-double, and, you know, and Z goes for 18, 9, and 7 assists. So those two freshmen are special. What makes them really good is their demeanor, too. They're gym rats. They love basketball. They're humble guys, no egos. And I think they're two of the best freshmen in the country.
You know, Chris, you went to the Sweet 16 as an assistant at Texas Tech. How different, then, does it feel to be going as a head coach and to see your vision that you had for that program become an actual reality?
Yeah, every journey's different. And, you know, I'm really proud of our run in 2005 when I was Coach Knight's assistant. And that's something that the people here in Lubbock still talk about it. But, you know, what we'd like to do is we'd like to continue to write the story, you know, as humbled and appreciative as we are to be playing in the Sweet 16, we sure would like to make it one more day. You know, I'd love to be on the show again because that means we're still playing.
Yeah, hey, listen, if you are still playing, you will be on the show again if I have any say in this thing. Hey, what about Bob Knight? How often do you talk to Bob Knight, and what's he have to say about this program right now, this team right now?
Coach has been so supportive. You know, I try not to bother him. I think he's earned the right to kind of live on his own terms here, but he has full access to the program. He comes by practice from time to time, spoke to our team last year. One of our guys on the staff, Daryl Dora, who's one of our players on the Sweet 16 team, he ate lunch with Coach Knight yesterday, as a matter of fact, and Coach just sent, you know, kind remarks to our team, proud of our guys. And then his wife, Karen, has been really good to our program as well.
And Chris, obviously your connection, our connection, goes back many, many years. It does involve food. We told that story last time he came on. I know you're a huge Whataburger guy. As long as we're talking about that, you said something very profound, I thought, the other day. Quote, have you ever gone to Whataburger at 2 or 3 in the morning? Do not go through the drive-thru. Go in next time and just get a corner booth and watch America. End quote. What are the types of things that you see in a place like that at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning? And as crazy as it sounds, does seeing that give you some kind of hope or inspiration on any level?
Absolutely. You know, I think we got the best country in the world, and I think in a late-night Whataburger or Denny's or IHOP, whatever your flavor is, just to kind of sit back in the booth from time to time, you see it all. And I've really got to give my girlfriend credit for that. We were going through the drive-thru months ago, and she's like, man, let's just go in. And then when we went in, it's just like an eye-opening experience for me. Just, you know, you see the good, the bad, and the ugly. But I think at the end of the day, it's kind of America. You know, you see everything. Everybody's getting along in there late at night. It's a lot like our team. You know, our team's kind of a melting pot. We've got JUCO kids, transfers. We got an international player on this year's team. And to me, a late night Whataburger run's the same kind of deal. That's like real America.
All right, so it seems
to
me
where the politicians should go to get the votes too, Jim. Like, you know, like my oldest daughter Avery, she's brilliant. She worked for the U.S. Senate last year as a junior in high school. She's going to Columbia University.
Wow.
I tell her all the time, like, hey, I don't know. I'm not as smart as you, and I don't know about all this politics, but if I was a politician, I would go to Whataburger late at night. I'd set up a little stand because, I mean, that's where the real people are.
That's amazing. She is doing great, and I think that's good advice for her. Now, listen, one last thought, though. If you're going there that late, and whether it's in the drive-thru or you're actually walking in, it seems to me you got to chase whatever you eat with a shake. What is your go-to shake order at Whataburger?
You know, really, diversity, spice of life. I tell the guys that all the time. And really, the same thing with the shake. I guess vanilla is the go-to. Strawberry, you know, when you're a little bit on edge. Coach Knight introduced me to the root beer milkshake. Daughters like salted caramel. But really, I'm kind of a variety guy. Like, I tell the guys all the time, like, we warm up to music in our practices. That's something I got from some football coaches. And, like, you know, the guys want to hear, like, rap and hip-hop every time. And I was like, dude, it's like variety is the spice of life. So we'll throw a country in there. We'll throw an old school, an R&B. We'll throw some heavy metal. We even throw in this year, we throw in the Italian national anthem for our freshman Moro. But just like I think with music, you got to appreciate everything. I think the same thing with milkshakes.
The Daily Jungle is also brought to you by MyPillow. clones. You know I am all about Nap Nation. And when it comes to sleep, how can you ever expect to get a good night of sleep if you don't have the right pillow? After listening to your terrible phone calls, more sleep may do all of you some good. No more tossing and turning or waking up in the middle of the night. My Pillow uses a patented technology that morphs perfectly to the type of sleeper that you are. You create the pillow that's right for you on the website. It's amazing. And of course, it's all manufactured right here in the United States. Each MyPillow comes with a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and the best part is you get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you've got nothing to lose. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-985-3307 and use the promo code JUNGLE to take advantage of my special 4-pack deal. Buy two premium MyPillows and get two Go Anywhere pillows for free. So again, go to MyPillow.com or call 800-985-3307 and use the promo code JUNGLE to take advantage of my special 4-pack deal. That's MyPillow, and now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Bill, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you, man?
Great, great. Good to talk to you, Bill. Thanks so much. You're coming off a weekend where you said that maybe you didn't think you were very good against Penn, except for certain stretches. You thought that maybe the same was the case with Seton Hall. Bottom line, Bill, you've been through this thing so many times. Are you concerned about how the team played, or is it more just a matter of we win, we move, we advance?
I think you're always concerned, but certainly the latter is more important. You know, you win, you advance. If you looked at our team, and you probably hadn't had a chance, but you know, we lost our only low post presence a couple of weeks ago, so we didn't have him for the Big 12 tournament. We had to play different, and then you know he wasn't able to practice, so obviously against Penn. We tried to utilize him, and it was limited minutes, but it just wasn't very effective. Plus, Penn is good. And then against Seton Hall, you know, it was his first time that he has actually really broke a sweat in a couple of weeks. And so we weren't as good as what we probably can play, but I think Seton Hall's good. And they got four guys that can really score. And after watching the tape, I was more pleased. I just didn't like how we finished the game, but I was more pleased than what I was probably during it. So I think we played a little better than maybe what some people think based on the competition. But we know we have to be better this weekend.
Fair enough. Bill Self, my guest. So let's talk about what you have now in Udoka Azubuki. 10 points, 7 rebounds, 22 minutes against Seton Hall. And, I mean, you did say this much, that if he doesn't play the way he did, maybe that's a much tougher game to win, and that's high praise. How much of an impact, then, did you see from him on both ends of the floor and even emotionally for the rest of the guys on the team?
Well, it was huge for us because Doak played 22 minutes, and the 18 minutes that he wasn't in there, now granted Delgado wasn't in there the whole time, but Delgado basically got in the 8 minutes that in the 18 minutes he wasn't in there, he basically, you know, had 20 points and 15 rebounds. So even though, you know, Delgado had a monster game, Doak at least neutralized him some when he was in there and kept him off the offensive glass. So and we didn't have to help on the post when Doak was in there, and when we did, you know, obviously they made three. So he was huge for us, and it gave our team a lift. You know, he was better for us defensively than offensively, but I do think that we have to play through him you know, from this point forward, however long it lasts. We've got to be able to get some inside baskets.
Well, so the fact that he played 22 minutes, Bill, how did he come out of that game, and where is he from a health standpoint? What kind of expectations do you have for his minutes against Clemson?
I think it's strictly conditioning. You know, he practiced on Friday. That was the first time he had done anything. Even on Thursday when he played in the game, he hadn't practiced. He hadn't broke a sweat. He hasn't done anything. So that was one reason why we limited it to him. And so we practiced him on Friday, and he played, and he didn't get that sore. So he took yesterday and Sunday off, and then he'll be full speed Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and he'll start on Friday as long as we don't have a setback, and hopefully – hopefully I'll be worried more about foul situations than I will health, because we're going to need him in there for 30 minutes.
We're talking to Kansas head coach Bill Self. You know, Bill, of course, you have the Big 12 Player of the Year in Devontae Graham, but then you have Malik Newman, who I thought had a monster game. He had 28 points. What do you make of the way he stepped up on a night where maybe Graham didn't have his best game?
Yeah, Devontae labored, and he hasn't had very many games like that, but he was 1-for-7 from the field, and really wasn't himself offensively, and you know, Svi had a solid game and gave us about 14, and LeGerald had a solid game. I think he gave us 12. But Malik put us on his shoulders there for a stretch and got us 28 and I think 18 in the second half during crunch time. So that was huge. You know, we've got a really nice team, really nice team. But there's not a lot of margin for error because we don't have a lot of depth, and we really need all five starters to play, you know, fairly well. And if we're not, then obviously somebody's got to have a monster game like Malik did. But hopefully moving forward, we can continue to have some balance. But Malik's been the difference in our team the last couple of weeks.
You know, going back to Graham for a minute, though, he is a senior, which means that any game could be your last game together. What has he meant to your program and to you personally?
Well, you say this all the time because we've been spoiled. You know, we had Frank Mason last year, and I said last year that I don't know that I've coached anybody that's meant more to our program than Frank, and until this year. Hey, Devontae's meant every bit as much to our program as Frank and all the other great ones we've had here. He's probably the most popular kid on campus. He's the best leader we've had. Statistically, you know, he's averaging 17.5 and 7.5, which are unbelievable great statistical a year, you know, unless Trey Young's in your league and he's averaging 27 and 9 or whatever. But he's been as good a leader as we've ever had here. So, you know, when you talk about KU greats, you know, he's definitely a guy that'll get his jersey hung in the rafter and certainly deserves it.
Bill, that's such an amazing statement that he might be the best leader you've ever had. But then again, from the second he walked on campus, you were telling him, I need you to be a vocal leader. You've got to be a strong vocal leader. And his response at the time was, how am I supposed to yell at guys like Wayne Selden and Perry Ellis? What did you see in him early on that made you believe that he could lead the way he has?
Just personality. You know, some guys, you know, just have it, or you know, you talk about that it factor all the time. Anybody that meets him knows he's got that, and you know, but it's hard to lead if you're not talented too. So, you know, knowing that his talent level was such, and knowing that he was comfortable with his own voice, and certainly was used to being vocal and that kind of, and his personality just naturally lends itself to be vocal. It was an easy thing for me to see that this could be as good as we've ever had in that area. Now, one thing I didn't anticipate was we talked about Frank last year committing to Towson or signing with Towson and become the national player of the year. I didn't anticipate, you know, Devontae, who signed with Appalachian State out of high school, to become a first-team All-American. But certainly, how he goes about his business and how hard he works and you know, his attitude allows him to be great.
Kansas head coach Bill Self joining us for a few more moments. You know, there was that point in the season where you were not in first place in the conference, and then there was that talk that maybe this was the year that the streak of regular season titles would come to an end. I mean, Bill, bottom line, how much does that streak mean to you, and then what do you make of the way the team responded to that challenge?
You know, I'd be lying if I said it didn't mean a lot. Certainly to win a league like the Big 12 14 years in a row, you know, I think, you know, speaks for itself and speaks volumes of the great players you've had in your program. And I think our players and our ex-players take great pride in that. Now, granted, it's not as important as going to a Final Four, and I know that. And we've got to, you know, we haven't always performed our best in the NCAA tournament. Hopefully this year will be different. But the bottom line is, you know, it's a remarkable show of consistency. You know, we know that if we can be the best team in our league, then we'll be in the game nationally. And we have been. We've been in the game nationally. But now we got to go punch that ticket.
Hey, before I let you go, I had Alvin Gentry on the show earlier this season. We were talking about the unreal collection of basketball minds in Lawrence with Larry Brown, a list that included Gentry, you, R.C. Buford, Greg Popovich, and more. I mean, it seems almost unreal, not even possible. What do you remember most about those days?
They were great. You know, you can also throw Calipari in that
sure,
mix.
Sure.
And Bob Hill. And then, of course, you know, all through Roy's staff, too. It's been an incredible run of guys that have come through here. And most of those guys was obviously, that you mentioned, were Larry guys and the staff he was able to put together and the success that they've had after they left here. But the bottom, you know, there's a lot of great minds out there. And certainly opportunity creates so many of those. And I got to say, Coach Brown has given so many guys an opportunity to do so many things just because of their connection to him. Look at Greg Popovich. If he didn't come here to be a volunteer coach from Pomona Pitzer, would he have ever had a chance to coach in the NBA? And there's just so many stories like that. But my roommate R.C. Buford, who's arguably as an effective of management guys there is in the NBA. There's so many, but really Coach Brown is the head of that tree.
It's an amazing thing. Before I let you go, I've got to ask you about Clemson. They beat Auburn by 31 on Sunday. Yeah. So what were you thinking as you watched that game, and what's been your message to your players about Clemson?
Well, they beat them by 31, but it wasn't that close.
Right.
Had them down 40, and certainly they're so well coached. Brad is a terrific coach, and he's getting his due like he deserves. Everybody's known it for a long time, but the guy coach, they don't make mistakes. You got to beat them, and they've dealt with some adversity, also losing a key player, and they've rallied around that. But hey, their perimeter's as good as we played against all year. And certainly they got a big guy that they can play around, and so we kind of mirror each other in that way. And they don't give up easy baskets. You got to make plays against them, and certainly they're capable of beating anybody.
Clones, give me a second because I want to talk to you about Fan Exchange. Are you thinking about buying tickets to your favorite sports, concert, or theater event? Maybe you want to experience March Madness courtside rather than on your couch. If so, you want to bust on over to FanExchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. Tickets purchased on FanExchange are always guaranteed. No getting to the gate and worrying about getting in. Whether it's March Madness, MLB Opening Day, WrestleMania, Coachella, or a Broadway musical, FanExchange gets you closer to the action. Find the very best seats at the very best prices at FanExchange.com. Use the promo code ROME. That's promo code ROME and get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. FanExchange. We have tickets. FanExchange. Promo code ROME. That's FanExchange. And now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Anyway, there's this old adage. You know, the adage which speaks to the randomness of life. Adage being, sometimes you get the bull, and sometimes you get the horns. My man, Martin Perez, apparently got both. For those of you who do not remember, Texas Rangers pitcher Martin Perez was spending his offseason at his ranch in Venezuela over the winter. At some point during the middle of December, the story broke that he had fractured his non-throwing elbow in a freak accident after a bull spooked him and he fell to the ground. That injury required surgery because the bull put him in the ground.
Put me in the ground.
Perez then spends most of the rest of the offseason recovering. Now, that'd be a weird enough story as is. Or it would be a weird story if it wasn't a baseball player, because baseball players suffer the weirdest injuries of all. They're always looking for new ways to get hurt. I mean, even the great George Brett missed 19 games after breaking his toe doing laundry back in 83. Or Glenn Allen Hill showed up to the yard on crutches after he had a nightmare in 1990. Carl Pavano lacerated his spleen, shoveling his driveway in 2013. And had to hang it up for good after getting damn near 7 liters of blood sucked out of his chest cavity. I mean, it's baseball. I could go on and on and on and on about all the injuries suffered in that game while not playing the game. Except unlike these other guys, Martin Perez apparently was plotting revenge. Like, that to him was not some kind of random thing. And far be it for him to be self-aware enough to say, man, that's my own problem. It's my own fault. I'm the one who owns a bull. I'm the one who got too close to a bull. That's on me. Oh, no. Oh, no. Martin didn't see it like that. Martin blamed it on the bull. So Martin apparently was looking for revenge. And revenge, as we all know, is a dish best served medium rare at 145 degrees. You see me working. You see where I'm going with this. Remember when I said, sometimes you get the bull and sometimes you get the horns. Apparently, Perez got both. Here's the both part. This guy had that bull slaughtered. Quote, I killed him and I ate him. It was good meat. No more bull. End quote. I mean, holy crap, Martin. Remember never to roll up on Martin Perez. I'd hate that maybe you spook this dude and you wind up on a conveyor belt to death. I mean, that's some Hannibal Lecter stuff right there. Hey, remember that bag who called this show recently? Matt from Santa Cruz? He called up earlier this month to try to test my knowledge on the herbivore lifestyle. Matt in Santa Cruz. Matt, good morning. How are you?
Not here to judge, criticize, or make you feel like any less of a person. Very quick question. Do you know the difference between a vegetarian or vegan?
I did. And we covered it. And then he tried to hit me up with a follow-up question that went equally badly for him. And then he was done. Yeah, I got a new answer for you, Matty. I know Martin Perez is neither a vegan or a vegetarian. No matter how bad you and that bull he ate wishes he were. I mean, seriously, though. Who's going to come out to the mound on this guy ever again? The second he took that knife and fork to that bull, the bull that dropped him, he essentially spray-painted his name on every inside corner in baseball. Who's going to mess with a guy that slaughters and eats his enemies? The bull was minding his own business. You're the one that freaked out. I mean, I don't know if that's just savage or the very epitome of cruel. 1 minute you're on the ground with a busted wing and probably trying to make up some story to cover yourself. The next minute you're dousing a home-killed, homemade steak with A1. Let that be a lesson, I guess, to all the bulls on that ranch. You don't want that guy to own you if you're a bull. You don't want to be on that ranch if you're a bull. And if you are a bull and you're on that ranch, man, stay down. Behave yourself. Because Martin Perez apparently is not afraid to turn any wild cattle into his dinner. Hey, Martin, have your bull. Hell, have your bull and eat it too. I'd own it. I'm all about accountability. I'm all about responsibility. No, I mean, even HUD would not have said that. I'm all about accountability and responsibility. You want a ranch? Great. You want livestock on that ranch? Great. You want a bull on that ranch? Great. You freak out and take a header as a result of a bull that you were not expecting? You don't eat the bull in response. Come on, man. Martin, a little overreaction, don't you think? But then again, I don't think you want to go out to the bump on that guy. Not without a knife and a fork. Wow. Imagine this guy dots some guy in the box, and immediately your first thought is, you're like, hey, wait a minute. That's that dude who slaughtered his own bull. Yeah, that'll happen. I'm fine. And then Martin's going to be looking at the batter like, yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, that's what I thought. Exactly. That's what I thought. Take your base. Mark Few is my guest. Mark, thanks for making time to come back on. Great to have you. How is your week shaping up, Mark?
Oh, man, it's going fast, Jim. We're already heading down your way, or getting ready to. It's kind of a short turnaround, but it's an exciting week, that week that leads up to the Sweet 16. I told our guys it's one of be one of the best weeks of their life, and can only be topped by that week leading up to the Final Four, which we experienced last year. But really, really proud of this group. Man, we lost a lot off that team last year, as you know, and for these guys to rally back and persevere and deal with all the expectations and deal with all the change and deal with me kind of riding them and prodding them and pushing them to get to that standard that we met last year, they've held up amazingly well.
Mark Few joining us. It's been a great run so far. You're not done yet. You know, when you talk about last year, Mark, of course, you graduated your top three scorers, and you're the only team from last year's Final Four that's still alive. Now, Zach Norvell did not play on that team, but he said he learned so much from watching that group. How much do the lessons then from last year's run inform or help this year's team?
Gosh, I think I think it's really helped us a lot. As I told some people at the start of the, you know, going into the NCAA tournament, that, you know, rather than speaking hypothetically about, hey, you know, we got to take care of business here and deal with adversity and, you know, handle whatever's thrown at us, you know, et cetera, and then, you know, we could make it to San Antonio. You know, that's stuff that you talk about, but having done it the year before and having actually, like, had our feet walking that path and experiencing it and having Northwestern make a run out of us in the round of 32 and having to deal with Huggies press and West Virginia in the Sweet 16 and South Carolina and, you know, in the national semifinal. The guys that were in that game, the Josh Perkinses, the Jonathan Williams, and even the guys sitting on the bench like Zach Norvell were able to see it, experience it, and I think it just gives you just a little bit of a better understanding of, man, I'm going to have to really dig deep and really learn to fight and handle this if we're going to move on.
Yeah, that was last year, but it's happening this year as well. For instance, you had that lead against UNC Greensboro. It slipped away. You still found a way to win. You were down 5 to Ohio State with 6 minutes left. Then you go on that 11-0 run. Josh Perkins said after the game, quote, "We're just getting more and more comfortable when adversity hits," end quote. How do you explain that, and is that the way it feels to you with this group?
Well, I mean, I hope they're saying – you know, I hope Josh is saying that, because we talk about it a lot, and we talk about, you know, anybody can play and anybody can function, and in the world of sports, when things are going good, but it's the true champions and the true winners that can bounce back after a double bogey, you know, can get up in the ninth after striking out in their last two at bats and get a game winning RBI. And you look at Norvell, who can, you know, struggle shooting the ball, and make two huge shots, you know, when it mattered most, going down the stretch. So, you know, we talk about it a lot. I think we understand again what it takes. But every game's different now. Now we're rolling into Los Angeles to just play this long, athletic, and just unbelievable. Rebounding and pressure defensive team in Florida State.
Mark, what about that? You've got Florida State next. They beat the number one seed Xavier. What kind of thoughts do you have as you prepare to go up against Leonard Hamilton's team?
Well, the first thought I have is it's really difficult for me to get my red squad, which is made up of a couple walk-ons and a couple other guys, to simulate, you know, 7-3 and 6-8. 6'5", 6'5", 6'6", you know, kind of across the board lengths and athleticism and ability to protect the rim, but yet, you know, pressure you relentlessly full court. So, we've been trying to prepare the guys for that. We really haven't faced much of that this entire year. So, we're having to kind of harken back to maybe some things we prepared, you know, the way we prepared last year for West Virginia and South Carolina.
We're talking to Mark Few, Gonzaga head coach, for a few more moments. Now, you did hit one of your legendary handstands after the win over Ohio State. Now,
are they really called legendary?
It's legendary. I'd go as far as to say they're iconic. And you've been doing this for years now, but in recent years, you and the team have incorporated some yoga into the training regimen. How much is that paying off?
Actually, the yoga is paying off in a big way. I think without the yoga, I'd have not only one blown or rotator cuff, but possibly two, and probably thrown my back out. So our yoga coach, Jordan Roskelly, has done a great job. I am definitely not the best in the class, but I'm also not the worst in the class. So I'll leave that up to maybe Jonathan Williams or one of the other guys that can barely touch their knees.
You know, I was going to say, Mark, I don't want to be the guy to say who is the worst, but is Jonathan Williams the worst?
Well, I mean, in yoga, I don't think you're not supposed to go like make it competitive, but right. Somehow we kind of do. He certainly is eager, and he's trying, and he's getting better, but he is not the most flexible human we've ever or you've ever seen. So he's definitely a work in progress.
You know, Mark, when you and I talked back near the start of the season, we talked about some of the controversy surrounding college basketball, and I don't want to dismiss or gloss over the challenges that the sport's facing, but when you see everything that took place over the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, does that remind you of how special the sport can be and is?
Oh, absolutely, Jim. And I think we talked about that. Like, if we can just get back to the product on the court, which is the kids and the players and the teams and the stories and the drama and the passion that is college basketball. I mean, it shines so bright when it's, you know, when it's allowed to just kind of have that focus and not dwelling on all the, you know, what I call the 5% of the, if it's even 5%, it's probably more like 2%. And I just think, what an amazing weekend. I can't remember a first weekend in the tournament that's been anything like this, for just the drama and probably the unexpected. But, you know, when you're in this business, it's really not that unexpected. I mean, that's why us coaches fret and worry and stress so much, because, you know, you're always thinking like, man, you know, this team could beat us. If they do this and they do this and we don't do that, then, you know, these guys could beat us. And I think this last weekend was just amazing with, you know, being an example of that.
Mark, did you see a 16 beating a 1, and did you see it happening this year?
Well, first of all, we've been a 1 twice. And I can tell you, Jim, that is not a fun game to coach to, the 1-16 game. You'd think it'd be a cakewalk, but you just, in the back of your mind, you just never wanted to be that team and that guy. And I remember playing Southern in Salt Lake with Kelly Olynyk's team. And, you know, they got us down to they were a low possession game, and it was kind of a grinder, and they had some nice athletes and really defended well. And we got down to the 4-minute timeout, and I think it was just a 1 or 2 possession game. And, I mean, it was – the crowd turns on you. I feel like even the officials kind of get excited about part of history, and just feels like everything's working against you. And, well, I mean, I knew it was going to eventually happen. It's just there's too many good teams out there. And then the other thing that happens is, you know, UMBC – earned their way into the tournament. So that means they either, you know, had an unbelievable year, or they won their conference tournament and they're hot and deserve to be there. So the other thing that really struck me, Jim, was just feel bad for Tony and Virginia, and I just hope that everybody, you know, can really look at their season in a whole, because, I mean, they had an amazing season. And for 40 minutes, they weren't very good, but, you know, for 5 months they were, I mean, the gold standard. And I think sometimes we just lose that in this, you know, we don't get to play 7-game series. We just get one game, and it's a shame sometimes that people want to define that one game or define you by that one game. I've never felt that's really right.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, Mark. And one last thought, because Tony Bennett said that right after the game. I hope that our guys are not defined by this. I hope the season's not defined by this. Fact of the matter is, they ran into a very good team, a very hot team. Virginia didn't have their best night, but you might not want to be that guy or that team. But can you imagine a guy handling that with any more class than Tony Bennett did?
Oh, and that's Tony, though. I mean, I know Tony, and I would call him a friend, and that's who he is. I mean, that's real Tony right there. He's not a good basketball coach either, Jim. I mean, he is an excellent basketball coach, probably as good as there is in our game right now. But he's an even better person with just his humility and his values and what he stands for. And I think that's a big part of why his teams are so good, because they reflect, you know, his character and his conviction. And the other thing that's hard, Jim, is flipping it, man. I mean, you get out of a locker room where everybody's essentially sobbing,
right,
and having their hearts broken, and you got to come out and put words to it.
Mike Krzyzewski is my guest. Mike, it is so good to have you back. How are you?
Yeah, good, Jim. Thank you for having me on. Always good to be with you.
You too, Mike. Great to have you back on. So tell me about the week. It's no secret. You've got yourself a young team, but you've been telling that team how special the NCAA tournament is and how they should not take any of it for granted. They handled their business so far. How do you like the way your young players have responded to the pressure and the opportunity?
Yeah, really well. You know, I think throughout, you know, we try to squeeze 4 years into about 8 months with some of these kids that, you know, are just the one and done and great kids. And they've wanted to learn the whole year, and they have. They've listened, and they're not afraid of big moments, though. You know, they haven't been the entire year, but they've learned to prepare better, to communicate better. You know, we believe we're a real team right now. Not that we weren't trying to be that, but through all the stuff, and not that there's a lot of adversity, but just the growing up that a team needs to do. We've done it. I thought we played really well in Pittsburgh. Grayson has become even a more vocal leader for us, and you know, we have a chance. You know, we're healthy, unless I mess them up here in the next 2 days of practice. That's a big thing, is you got to be careful, too much contact in practice. We're playing our best basketball this season right now.
We're talking to Mike Krzyzewski, and isn't that what every coach wants, to play your best basketball when it matters most? You know, you mentioned Grayson. Time is kind of a funny thing. I mean, I can't decide if it feels like it was just yesterday or if it feels like it was a decade ago that Allen was scoring 16 in the national title game against Wisconsin. So how far has he come as a player and a leader since that game?
Yeah, a long way. You know, he was the eighth man on an outstanding team who had that moment, like a lot of kids have it in the NCAA tournament, not in a national championship game like he did. But, you know, he worked hard and was prepared. And then the next year he's an All-American. He has an incident of tripping. And then his junior year is plagued by a couple of those incidents. But more, even worse, was all the injuries he had. And then he came back. And this year he's been healthy. He's the only real upperclassman we have, and he has learned to be a leader this year. And the guys, our freshmen, and the rest of the guys will follow him. They're a real close group, and I'm proud of Grayson. He's learned a lot through success and adversity and amazing scrutiny. I'm proud of him.
Mike Krzyzewski joins us for a few more moments. And then, of course, you've got Marvin Bagley III. He has been an absolute force, Mike, in the last six games. 22 points, 9 rebounds against Rhode Island as an example. When he arrived on campus, everybody had extremely high expectations for him. What were your expectations for him, and how would you describe the way that he's playing right now?
Well, you know, I had to learn who he was as a player. You don't do that until you start coaching him. And he really didn't. He wasn't here during the summer. He started when the school year started, and usually we have our freshmen for the summer, but he had to complete his academics to graduate from high school. And what I found, though, is really a gem. He's a great kid. The family's terrific, and he comes to work every day. You know, he's got a great attitude. He's learning about the game, and I just think he's had a fabulous year. And again, I think he's a much better basketball player right now than he was in October and November.
Mike Krzyzewski is our guest. You know, when you beat Rhode Island, of course, that meant that you were beating Dan Hurley, somebody that you've known for decades, going back to when you were recruiting Bobby to Duke. When talking about that matchup, you talked about the Hurley family's love for, quote, the dignity of work. I think that's a great phrase. I got to be honest also, Mike, I love Dan and Bobby both and how they work. What do you mean by their love of the dignity of work?
Well, you know, like where their family and my family's the same. You know, we are blue collar from inner city Chicago. My mom, you know, cleaned offices in downtown Chicago, you know, late at night. And my dad was an elevator operator and, you know, uncles who were bakers and workers. And You always showed up for work. You know, you took pride in everything that you did, and it showed in your family. You took pride in how you dressed, how you went to school, how you, you know, and it came from not a lot of money or anything. It came from just whatever you have, you do well. And you know, my brother, God bless him, who passed away a few years ago, was a captain in the Chicago Fire Department. And in 37 years, he never missed a day of work. Hmm. And there's a dignity. There's a feeling that you have when you show up and you're ready to do a good job with no excuses. And that's what the Hurley family have. They've done that. His dad is as good a coach as there's ever been at any level. And it's because they work every day. They come to work every day, and they love work. And work shouldn't be a bad word, because if you work, you get better, and people can count on you.
Mike Krzyzewski joining us. I know somebody else who you'd probably apply that same sort of thing to, Pat Summitt. Now, Pat Summitt, yes, is the person you passed for most wins by a Division I coach. I know you've spent time with Pat. I always enjoyed having her on the show, Mike. For those who don't know her, how would you describe Pat?
Well, she's one of a kind. You know, she really is the person who has put women's basketball today in the glory, in the great position it's in, because she believed it should be great, and she coached it at that level. You know, if she did not have her health issues, you know, she would have won hundreds of more games, because she was a pioneer, and she could have coached men if she wanted to. I'm not saying she should have wanted to. And I always respected her greatly, and we shared a moment when we were persons of the year for Sports Illustrated. But that was, she had already had her health issues at that time. And basically she got the women's game going, and she was good enough to start a series with Geno at Connecticut. And the two of them, you know, that those games were marquee games that people wanted to watch. She was must-see TV for women's basketball when women's basketball was not must-see TV. And I have the utmost respect for what she accomplished there at Tennessee.
Me too. Last thought, I know you've got a press conference you've got to hit, but you and Jim Boeheim are going to get together in the Sweet 16. Now, their zone causes lots of problems for lots of teams, especially in the tournament. Now that you see them on a more regular basis during the ACC, and, of course, you've spent time together with USA Basketball, does it get any easier to face?
No. Yeah, they're really good. And, you know, the thing is, we play zone now.
Yeah, you do.
And a lot of both of our zone, there's a lot of similarities, because I learned a lot about the zone from Jim and from Mike Hopkins, who did a great job at Washington this year. You know, Mike spent a number of years with us in USA Basketball, along with my associate head coach, Jeff Capel. And, you know, you talk about, we actually put the zone in with USA Basketball. We only used it once, but you're with these guys, and you learn not only the drills and the X's and O's, but the mentality that you have in order to teach it. So, Jim runs it real well. I think right now we're running it real well. I don't know how they put the two zone teams. They put us, if you look at the brackets, we're in the right corner. You know, it's like they're putting the zone teams.
Funny how that worked out, right?
Yeah. But it's an honor. Jim, there's no one I'm closer to in basketball than Jim. And we shared 11 years together as co-coaches of the U.S. team, and that was just a marvelous experience.
And there you go. Podcast Tuesday, episode 29 with Eric Weddle, should be to you by the drive home tonight. Make sure you look for that, and then check right back here tomorrow. We'll have a lot more where this came from. See you then.